We cover 15 major health problems that overweight people get, and you don't want them. Most people want to lose weight to fit into those tight jeans, but maybe after this show, you just might want to lose weight for your health. All this and more today on episode 39 of Fat to Fit Radio.
Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio, your source for real weight loss solutions without the hype. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Ainsley and Russ Turley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to show number 39. Jeff, how's the weather?
The weather. Well, you know, actually, in Calgary, since we're always talking about weather, we have two seasons of weather. I don't know if you've heard this down in California, but we have winter and construction. That's all we have up here, because all the construction gets done in the summer, and then in the winter, it's too icy to drive. But that's all I want to say about weather. How are you doing down there in Long Beach, California?
Doing well, and first off, I'll weigh in 257.6. I believe I'm down, what is it, about...
That's 38.4 pounds. So that means you just got 0.6 of a pound to catch up to the show number and the pounds that you've lost. And that's kind of the ultimate goal, remember?
Yes, the arbitrary goal of a pound a show. Well, no, that's good, because especially when we get back to a show every week here in a couple weeks here, we'll start back on that that schedule, but... Yeah, that'd be nice to push every week and losing that pound. It's a grand thing, especially when you look back and it's been 20 weeks and you lost 20 pounds. Seems like it's great.
So what are you doing for your weight loss to catch up here?
Well, this I mentioned last show that when we was going camping, and I went and I camped, and it was a good time. We went to this place called Jackson Flats. It was up near this Mountain High, Wrightwood area here in Southern California. And on one side, you can see it's just mountains and really beautiful. And then the other side, it's the desert. You can look out and you can see, it looks like you can see to Las Vegas. I mean, it is that clear and that flat. I mean, it was beautiful. And we went on top of this water tower, and I swear you could see forever. And well, it was a beautiful place. And so if anybody lives here in Southern California, I definitely suggest you go camping over in Jackson Flats. And a beautiful place to hike, great trails and everything. It was a good time. And probably a lot of that weight loss was, you get a lot of hiking in. I probably did about, I'm going to guess, five, 6 miles on hiking over the weekend. So I'm going to guess that had a lot to do with the old weight loss this week.
Sounds awesome. Well, let's move on to our email and comments.
All right. Well, the first one here is from Tom Stewart. We haven't heard from Tom in a while. And he wrote, "Hey, guys, I listen to your show since its beginning and find it very informative and entertaining. I thought you have answered most of the questions I've ever had about fitness and lifestyle changing until now. Over the last 3 months, I've traveled throughout Ontario, Canada, and kept a fitness routine in 8 hotels. I had a goal of losing 2 pounds a week, but found it difficult to know if I was exactly reaching my goal because of the different scale variances. I would love to hear what types of scales you use to weigh yourself, and if any, what are the better ones to purchase? Are the expensive scales worth the money, or are the cheaper ones just as good? How do you know how accurate a scale is? Do the bells and whistles of a scale really make a difference, i.e. body fat percentage readers? Hope you can answer this. Thanks again on a great show."
Well, here's another email with a whole ton of questions in there. And there's two basic types of scales, the spring or the electric scale. Now, this is for the home use. No one's really going to go out and buy one of those doctor scales, you know, with the balances and stuff, because they're super expensive. In general, the electric scales are always going to be a lot more accurate than the spring scales, because over time, the springs, you know, they wear out a little bit and you weigh less or more, depending on the type of scale that you have. Now, when it comes to the electric scales, the price doesn't really matter too much. I mean, you don't want to go super, super cheap. But if you look at some of the websites like Tanita.com, when you look at all of their different scales, they all have the exact same precision. The only difference, like you said, are all of the extra bells and whistles. How many different people can use a scale and have memory of how much they weighed, you know, the day before and what the average weight is, etc. So spending a lot more money doesn't necessarily make you have a more accurate scale.
Yeah, so Jeff, I've got the health meter scale. And so it's a little, it measures your body fat and your water percentage and gives you your weight as well. And it'll do that for, and keep track of it for 4 different people. Now, this is one I purchased, I believe it was at Target or Walmart, one or the other. And it's been very accurate. Which one do you use?
Well, I've had two Tanita scales. One kind of broke after about 2 years, and I've had some good results. I've had a lot of weird things kind of happen with these scales, and the way to get around a lot of these weird things is really try and do some things so you get the best readings. And by that, you really have to measure yourself at the exact same time every day and in the same condition. So for example, when it takes my body fat percentage, you step on the foot pads, and what it does is it passes a little electrical current up through one leg and down the other. You can't feel it, but it's that resistance that figures out what is your body fat percentage. And how it does that is it looks at how much water you have in your body, and it kind of guesstimates on your height and your weight how much body fat you have. Now, if I have an alcoholic drink the night before, that changes because I'm a little bit more dehydrated. If I have some salty food, that changes because I'm retaining more water. So you have to take an average over a couple days to get a true body fat percentage. Or if you're a perfect eater and you're very regular, then it might be a little bit easier day by day. Do you find problems like that at all, Russ?
I'm going to say, yeah, it is. You know, within about 0.2% on body fat and water percentage. And on weight, you know, if I step on, I try to do this, you know, when I first get up and I'll step on the scale and then, you know, wait about 10 minutes, step on back on again and see what it tells me. And usually it's the exact same. So, and you know, as you go, you know, you'll see, you know, mostly it's not the scale. It's going to be, so it just changes. And, you know, have you had a lot of water before that? You know, have you gone to the bathroom? You know, so many things happen. And it's amazing when you weigh yourself before you go to bed. This is the best part. Weigh yourself before you go to bed and you're, you know, 3 pounds heavier, it seems like. And you wake up and all of a sudden 4 pounds are gone. And you're like, hey, how did that happen? Three or four pounds disappeared when I slept. It was amazing. So I always find that just a great thing. But
well, the science behind that is because there's only so much fat in the world. And when you're sleeping on this side of the planet and you lose that weight, everyone on the other side of the planet throughout the day gains that weight.
Nice. Very nice.
Yes.
But, you know, one thing, you want to make sure when you use a scale too, to make sure it's on a nice hard surface, hard level surface, and that you're standing on it as flat as you can. You know, don't put it in the corner so you have to stand kind of weird, because that will affect the your weight as well on when you're taking that.
That's right. And I really agree that I think everyone should get a body fat scale, because weight doesn't always matter. And you can be stuck at the same weight for, you know, 7 or 8 days and not feeling that you're having any success, but you can see your body fat slowly, you know, changing, and then your weight might catch up the next week to it. So it is a little bit more motivating when you can measure more things and have more successes than just weight. And another thing about the body fat percentage, mine is wrong because I've got a lot of muscle, and my body fat scale has a setting for an athlete or just an average person. And my body is somewhere in the middle. If I change it to the athlete mode, it really underestimates my body fat. And the regular mode, it's overestimated. So I just kind of take a sort of an average between there. But it makes me think back when I was in university and I was taking an economics course. And they're talking about some numbers that had to do with some sort of economic indicator. And someone said, you know, what does 3.15 really mean? And the instructor said, you know, it doesn't matter, because it's just a measure. You can see if your economy is getting better or worse if the number changes. So even if your body fat percentage is off, it's measuring it very accurately, even if it is off. So if it goes up or down, you still have progress. And you don't have to worry too much about the number. You just can see that, yes, it is changing. And as I said at the start, most of the body fat scales, they're all going to measure probably to 0.2 of a pound and to 0.1 percentage of body fat. So they are very accurate, and the differences are all about the extra bells and whistles. And Russ, yours has the amount of water weight, but in reality, all body fat scales have to know that in their calculations to get your body fat percentage. So you got to think, they're selling you the same scale, but just a few extra readouts for a bit more money. But if that motivates you, by all means, go for broke.
All right, I want to thank Tom for his email, and a couple ways to get a hold of us. And the first one is by leaving a comment on the website over at fat2fitradio.com.
Or you can send us an email to podcast@fat2fitradio.com.
Ricola. That's the echo that I hear on the voicemail, because nobody's calling in. Leave a voicemail by clicking on the call me button over on the website at fat2fitradio.com.
And of course, you can join our support group at fattofitsupport.com. And actually, this week, we just passed 250 people in the support group.
That's awesome. All right, now let's get into a couple of news items on this week's web report.
Well, the item that I have this week comes from livescience.com, and it was an article entitled "Small Packages Trick People to Eat More." Now, there's two new marketing studies found that some people tend to consume more calories when junk food portions and packages are smaller. For some, it's because they perceive small packages to be, get this, diet food. Now, we've always talked about the bigger packages of junk food, you always eat more, but now they're finding that dieters, when they see the small packages, they think this is sin-free food, and they actually eat more. So here's the two studies, and these are both going to be in the October 2008 Journal of Consumer Research. Now, in the first study, they had people watching the television show Friends, and they told them that the study was about the commercials that they were going to see. And they put out bags of potato chips, you know, regular size and the smaller bags. And of course, people ate more of the smaller bags than out of the larger bags. And then in a second study, now this one is really interesting, they categorized people as restrained and unrestrained eaters. Now, what this really means, a restrained eater is someone who was a chronic dieter. You know, people who are always watching their weight. And they found that these chronic dieters tended to consume more calories from the mini packs than the unrestrained participants. So you got to think, people are getting into a mindset of always really being careful about what they eat, and then they say, oh, here's only the 100 calorie package of junk food, and then they tend to eat more and more. It's kind of a license for splurging a little bit, but it's only 100 calories. So what do you think about this, Russ?
Well, you know, boy, so many of these little packages now come with 100 calories. They're emblazoned on the front, and that's, you know, I don't know that it's on purpose as much as these companies are trying to say, okay, here, we're going to help you out. Here is 100 calories. It's up to the, I think it's up to an individual, you know, whether you eat five of those or one of those. I would tend to agree that people, when they see these little packages, they think, oh, it's, you know, yeah, it's like diet food. It's there's no calories, or it seems like there's none because there's just these little crisps or something that, you know, you're consuming. But the reason that these things are so small and they contain 100 calories is because they're very dense. There's lots of sugar and lots of starches in those things. And I understand why people would eat more, but I can see definitely that it's doing them harm.
I just think, according to this Journal of Consumer Research, all of these junk food makers, you know, the potato chips and the small cookies, etc., they're all making more and more profit. They're selling more and more junk food. As people are being more concerned about not eating junk food, they're actually selling more because they've found a marketing trick that people are really getting interested into. Of course, I do agree, you know, if I want a treat, I, you know, would rather eat a 100 calorie thing and not have a larger bag. But when you look at it from the industry perspective, they're making more money because people are now eating more because they feel that they can. So that was just an interesting article. So what do you have for us this week, Russ?
Well, I found this interesting article. It's over at sciencedaily.com. And the title of the article is "Killer Carbs: Scientists Find Key to Overeating as We Age." And this was a university scientist has discovered key appetite control cells in the human brain degenerate over time, causing increased hunger and potentially weight gain as we get older. And this doctor, Dr. Andrews, found that appetite-suppressing cells are attacked by free radicals after eating, and said the degeneration is more significant following meals that are rich in carbohydrates and sugars. Now, it says here, the more sugars and carbs you eat, the more appetite control cells are damaged, and potentially you consume more food. So, you know, you look at this, and while these carbohydrate-rich and sugar-rich foods are, number one, causing things like diabetes and causing our bodies to, you know, increase insulin production, they're also causing these appetite control cells, which I've never even heard of myself, they're causing you to eat more. They're damaged, and they're saying, your body is saying, hey, give me more food now, because these cells are damaged. And gosh, there's just so many things that these overproduced refined sugars and calorie dense foods, these processed foods, are doing to us. It's just, you need to get those things out of your diet. And this, the study is just another one of those, another one of the clues that that's happening to us all.
That's really good. You had something else too, didn't you?
I did. I came across this this item here. I found it on a, I think it was somebody, another blog, another weight loss blog I was reading. It was very interesting. But they said they were doing this thing called the 100 push-up challenge. And I thought, well, that sounds interesting. So I took a look at it. And it is a full program that you start out by taking an initial test of, you know, how many push-ups can you do? And over this 6-week program, they're going to get you to do 100 push-ups without stopping. And it's just, it looks great. And so I'm going to try this, and it's going to give me an opportunity here and reason to post over at the Fat to Fit support site. I'm going to start a sort of thread on there and talk about this 100 push-up challenge. So look for that over at fattofitsupport.com. And I'm going to be posting my initial number of push-ups. We'll see how good or sad that is, but it's going to be fun. I did this. It wasn't the exact thing, item here, the 100 push-up challenge, but over on Fat Guy Radio, I just was reading this article and it said, you know, how many can you do? So I stopped down. I think I was able to do 8, if I recall at the time. I think I'll be able to do more this time. We'll find out. So take a look at that. There'll be a link in the show notes for the 100 push-up challenge.
We'll look for that at the Fat Fit Support. Well, let's move on to our feature section this week.
Yeah, so this week, we're going to kind of count down, have a little top 15 list of sorts. And what this list is, diseases or afflictions that are commonly caused or might be caused by obesity and being overweight. And, you know, when you look in the mirror and you look at yourself, and you think, gosh, I really need to lose weight. You know, that's a good motivation. If you, if you have some kind of external stimulus, you want to get ready for a date or a reunion, that's something also. You know, for a lot of people, it is a health problem. Their doctor said, you need to lose weight. You're going to die. You have this disease caused by obesity. Last week we talked about, or a couple weeks ago, we talked about diabetes, and that's on our list here. But there are a bunch of things that are at least partially or commonly attributed to obesity. And we're going to run down that list right now.
Well, you already mentioned diabetes, so I'll start with diabetes. Diabetes is a disorder where the pancreas is not producing enough or sometimes not any insulin. And diabetes can lead to a whole host of other medical issues. And obesity is one of the main causes due to the body having excess glucose due to overeating. Now, I'm going to really summarize again how you can get type 2 diabetes. And the first step, assuming that you're constantly overeating, especially simple carbs such as things with sugar or bread, your body is constantly releasing insulin to take all of the sugar out of your blood and move it into your cells. Now, these cells start to become resistant to the insulin because there's always so much insulin in the blood because you're always eating and more insulin. Now, the second stage, because your cells don't react to insulin like they used to, your body starts producing more and more insulin. And to put it simply, it starts to wear out the ability to make insulin. And then, whammo, you have type 2 diabetes. Now, what's so bad about type 2 diabetes? Well, you could go into a severe coma, or you could even die. And besides feeling crappy, a very common thing that happens is that when people are first diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, it's because their eyesight is changing really quickly. They're losing their eyesight. And blurred vision is one of the first signs. And if you keep going and not treating your diabetes, you can actually go blind.
All right, so the next one on the list here is cancer. Now, there are many different forms and types, and many of them could be prevented with more attention to eating healthy and avoiding obesity. So what's so bad about it? You know, how many people do you know that have died from cancer? You know, anymore these days, that if you can avoid cancer, boy, you have a really long and fairly healthy life. And so not only, you know, can you die from it, but you're going to be fighting it for many years, chemotherapy and all these things. So treatments, they are really bad on the body. Chemotherapy, you can lose hair. Radiation treatments, and then and surgery. These are all things that, you know, try to get rid of the cancer, but the best way is to avoid it, and a good way to start that is by losing weight and avoid being obese.
And the next one is heart failure. Now, a lot of people don't know what heart failure is, but what it is, it's a condition in which the heart can't pump enough blood to the body's other organs for a variety of reasons. And you might have heard it called congestive heart failure. And why it's so bad, I was looking up here, and according to a variety of cardiologists, for every pound of fat that you gain, you grow between 1 to 7 miles of extra blood vessels. Now, these aren't the big, thick blood vessels, just the tiny, small capillaries, etc. But let's just say that you grow an extra 20 miles of blood vessels. That's a lot of extra work that your heart has to push your blood through your body, and it gets very taxing on your heart year after year after year. And that kind of leads into the next one.
Yeah, the next one is an enlarged heart, and it can be related to congestive heart failure. And it's another heart condition where the muscle of the heart becomes larger due to being overworked, which naturally happens if you're overweight. So why is an enlarged heart so bad? Well, the symptoms of an enlarged heart can include swelling, dizziness, shortness of breath, weakness, arrhythmia, and heart palpitations, which are strong, fast, or obviously abnormal heartbeats. And they can be very scary if you have a palpitation.
And the next one is osteoarthritis, which is a clinical syndrome in which low-grade inflammation results in pain in the joints caused by abnormal wearing of the cartilage, oftentimes due to obesity. So think of it this way. You lose the lubrication between your joints, and your bones start to grind together when you move, and it's extremely painful. And osteoarthritis is the most common form of arthritis, and currently there's more than 21 million sufferers just in the U.S. alone. And most people will eventually feel some pain in their senior years. But by being overweight, this can literally take decades and decades away from you. You know, you might genetically get osteoarthritis when you're 95 years old, but being overweight, you might get it when you're 35 because of all of that extra strain. So that's a really important one as well.
All right, the next one here on the list is lymph edema. And it's a condition that occurs from a damaged or dysfunctional lymphatic system, sometimes caused by people suffering from obesity actually crushing the lymphatics. Lymph's the fluid that exists between all your cells. What happens is when you get a blockage, your body starts to swell. If you've seen any of these shows recently on TV that show people who are in 400 to 500 pound range, many of them have these huge edemas or swellings on their legs that are literally 50 to 100 pounds or more. And once your body weight has crushed your lymphatics, surgery may be the only option to remove it.
The next one is gastroesophageal reflux disease, or GERD, and most people know it as heartburn. And that means that your stomach acid and juices are flowing up from your stomach back into your esophagus, and that's causing all that pain in your chest. Now, it's common in overweight people, and besides difficulty swallowing and chronic chest pain after eating, symptoms include coughing, hoarseness of voice, voice changes, chronic earache, and even nausea. Now, for a lot of people who have this and use a lot of antacids, you know, that's just kind of a stopgap measure. You know, if you lose some weight, you have a lower chance of having this.
Right. The next one's very fun here. It's urinary incontinence, and it's the inability to control one's urine. And it is frequently associated with obesity, weak bladder, and pelvic floor muscles. What a fun topic. Believe it or not, one of the first treatments is exercise, which builds up those muscles again. So if you're having a problem, you know, you jump on, you do run a little bit and you feel like, I got to go to the bathroom. You know, there is hope. You can exercise and get some control back.
And what about abdominal hernias? Now, these are caused when there's a weakness in the abdominal wall and basically your innards start spilling through. And if you've ever felt that you've eaten so much that your stomach would burst, well, this is kind of what literally happens with a hernia. So if you have a really large belly and it's putting a lot of extra pressure on your abdominal wall, that really doesn't help. And personally, a few years ago, I had a double hernia from just natural muscle weakness. And I had two holes where my intestines were poking out under my skin. It was really gross, really painful. And, you know, I can attest that you don't want that to happen to you if you can help it. And in most cases, it requires surgery to fix it.
Yeah, I invite anybody who, this is one of those pictures where you see on the internet and you got to see it for yourself. Type in abdominal hernia inside of your Google images search and check out some pictures. It's not a fun thing at all. But the next one on the list is gallbladder disease. Now, it's funny, Jeff just mentioned he had an abdominal hernia. I had gallstones and had my gallbladder removed in 1995. So this is one thing here that I've had. And gallbladder disease commonly affects overweight people as a result of high blood cholesterol levels and causes gallstones, which can become as large as golf balls. When you get a gallstone attack, you experience intense pain in the upper abdominal region that steadily increases for approximately 30 minutes to several hours. I'll tell you, I had a gallbladder attack, gallstone attack. And I had to go to class. I was still in college at the time. and I couldn't go. I was sitting on my bed, doubled over. I couldn't move. If I moved even a one little bit from a fetal position, I felt like I was going to be split in half. It was that intense. So gallbladder disease.
Yikes. The next one is fatty liver disease, and it's a condition where large pockets of fat accumulate in liver cells. And fatty liver can be considered a single disease that occurs worldwide in those with excessive alcohol intake and those who are obese. The good news is, you know, if you lose the weight, it is a reversible condition.
Next one is sleep apnea. And that's when you stop breathing during your sleep, and it can be fatal. This can happen dozens of times per night, and most often you never know that you have it until you are observed by someone else while you are sleeping. Many obese people need to wear an oxygen mask device at night that keeps positive air pressure. Go on YouTube and type in sleep apnea and check out some of the little videos that children have taken of their fathers or grandfathers. That's normally who I've seen with that have sleep apnea, and they literally look like they're gasping for breath. It's a scary thing.
Well, speaking of scary things, the next one is gout, which is actually a joint disease that's caused by high levels of uric acid in the blood. And uric acid sometimes forms into solid stone or crystal masses that become deposited in the joints. Gout is more common in overweight people, and the risk of developing the disorder increases with higher body weights. I actually have a relative who has gout, and he talks about it's in his toes, and it feels like he's got sandpaper in there. He talks about it, and just crunching, and extremely painful. Yeah.
Wow. Well, this next one I'll never have, but it sounds not fun also. Polycystic ovarian syndrome. It's the most common hormonal disorder among women of reproductive age and is a leading cause of infertility. The exact cause isn't known, but insulin resistance, diabetes, and obesity are all strongly correlated. So any one of those or a combination can give you polycystic ovarian syndrome.
And the last one that really affects all the guys here, erectile dysfunction. And we all know what that is, of course. And obesity can definitely have an impact. Now, if you're overweight and you smoke, the chances are really good that you're going to suffer from this at some point in the future. Because smoking is a key cause, and your chances of getting erectile dysfunction are actually 85% higher in male smokers compared to non-smokers. And if you then add in obesity, you know, it's getting kind of risky there.
Now, I definitely want to add here at the end of this that, you know, Jeff and I are not doctors. You know, we don't pretend to be. And if you have any of these disorders, you should definitely go see a doctor. I mean, all these things are treatable by a doctor. And if you have even think you might have any one of these items, get to the doctor right away and get checked out.
Yeah, that's some good advice. And just because you're overweight, it doesn't mean that you're going to get any of these diseases, but your likelihood and risk factors definitely go up a lot higher than the normal population. So Russ, why don't we move on to the recipe of the week?
All right. So this week in the recipe, I definitely wanted to do something for dessert. You know, I do a lot of main courses. Last week I had mango salsa, which could be used with as an appetizer or part of your main dish. And it seems to be a lot of entrees and salads and things. So this week I want to do a dessert. And what better? It's hot. It's summer. We often talk about the weather in the beginning of this show for some reason. I don't know. So this week, I wanted to throw out a recipe for some homemade ice cream, and in particular, a low-calorie version. And this one is linked to in the show notes. It's from eZine Articles, and it's for a low-fat vanilla ice cream. I'm also going to have a link in the show notes for how to make ice cream without an ice cream machine. If you don't have one of those machines where you have to put the rock salt and the ice in and turn it by hand, or even one of these Salton ice cream makers where you stick it in the freezer with the cord sticking out, you don't need those things. And there's a great article here on how to make ice cream at home without an ice cream maker. So those will both be in the show notes.
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, because something cool and refreshing here in the summer. But Jeff, what kind of homework do we have for everybody at home this week?
Well, this week, I want you to take some time and reflect on your own health and think about your family history with diseases and conditions. Now, which of these diseases or conditions that we talked about do you think that you might develop? Or have you already developed some of these as a result of being overweight and some other factors? If any of these conditions scare you, that's good. Use it to keep yourself motivated on your journey towards health.
Yeah, that's it. You got to keep track of the old health and make sure you're taking care of number one there. But also, what kind of motivational quote do we have this week?
Well, I have a quote from Dr. Brian Carter, and it is, "Your lifestyle, how you live, eat, emote, and think determines your health. To prevent disease, you might have to change how you live."
All right, great quote. And thank you, Jeff, for all the great information. And thank you all for listening and for downloading this podcast. All the show notes are found over at fat2fitradio.com, as well as a YouTube channel. You can check out little videos that we've created there. Might be a couple more up here soon. Also, check out Podcast Alley, where you can vote for the podcast there, and iTunes. If you have a couple minutes and you'd like to give us a review on iTunes, we'd really appreciate that. Links over on the website at fattofitradio.com. And the final one I want to mention is Dig. Dig.com, D-I-G-G.com, has a podcast section. And if you are a Dig user, we would definitely appreciate a little Dig on the podcast. And the link is also on the website at fattofitradio.com. And we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Send your feedback or questions to podcast@fattofitradio.com. For more information on today's show or any previous shows, visit the website at fattofitradio.com. If you would like to support the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast directory.